following podcast is a TJ DeSantis production. Comments, questions, and inquiries can be sent to DeSantisProd@gmail.com. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I f***ing love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston accent.
Big jab there from Duffy, and Brett Beer is hurt now.
Down goes Duffy on call.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Oh, do I miss calling fights with Ken Flo? How about the new show open today, Flo? I think that was July 2015, San Diego, California, Frank Mir, Todd Duffy.
I remember it well. I remember I left my wallet in an Uber and I lost everything. I had a bunch of cash in there, a nice wallet that my mom gave me. I'm sorry, Mom, I lost the wallet.
Ken Flo was so ahead of his time, he was using Uber back in 2015.
I miss those days, man. That was fun. That was a lot of fun, and that was a crazy fight.
Well, I'm still holding out hope that those days will return. But TJ DeSantis freshen up the show open this week. It is Monday. It is January 28th. The year is 2019. This is episode 188 of the Anik and Florian Podcast. I'm having a little podcast studio built out at my house, as I think I told the listeners last week, so if you're hearing an echo, it's because I'm in my mother's atrium. I am in Delray Beach, Florida today. I am not at home because it would have been too loud with a baby and a desk being built. So here we are. Hopefully the audio's okay. Ken Flo, 6 days until Super Bowl 53. I do not have a game ticket yet.
Neither do I. I've been probing. I've been probing my sources. I got nothing. I got nothing, kid. Man, that would be awesome to be there, but I don't know if it's going to happen, man.
His bags are packed. Send him home. His bags are packed. Send him home. Well, there are a lot of factors, right? So for me, I think the biggest factor is that I got to spin it around to Melbourne next Wednesday, right? Yep. So when you start to think about the factors, and I hate to think about the outcome and all of this, but just imagine the Patriots lose to the Rams. I get in a car to drive through the night, you know, maybe stop in Jacksonville after 5 hours. You know, I come back home maybe 2 p.m. Monday, immediately do the podcast, and then start thinking about UFC 234 and going to Melbourne on Wednesday. I don't know if it's necessarily in the cards. I've also been fighting with my twin brother in terms of the section and where we want to sit. So
yeah,
we're not there yet, but I'm still holding out hope. The other thing, too, candidly, my 7-year-old daughter, Riley, when I told her the Super Bowl party was canceled and I was going to Atlanta, she burst into tears and was so upset that I feel like I got to, you know, a Super Bowl party is back on, Riley, if you're listening. So I don't think we're going to Atlanta. But a lot to get to today. Longo coming up in about 10 minutes. We will also today officially begin the 2019 main event challenge. Ken Flo has 5 main card picks for UFC Fight Night, a Sun Sal versus Moraes 2. But off the top today, I wanted to lead with this because I was afraid I wouldn't get to it. Max Blessed Holloway just continues to be the man. Inside the octagon, might be the most exciting champion we have. And outside the octagon, great post on social media over the weekend. Likely in an attempt, I think, to ratchet up the conversation for a rematch against the Proper 12 Whiskey founder, Conor McGregor. Max Holloway took to Twitter and Instagram, and he seemingly, Flo, teamed up with Jameson Whiskey. He wrote, 238 years of innovation, hard work, and unmatched quality, not a watered-down trend, a true pillar of Ireland, supporting the hardworking families in Dublin for generations. Thank you, Jameson Whiskey, for the hospitality, the number one Irish whiskey in the world. Ken Flo, I mean, this is really well done. I know you walked out in Vancouver during the Stanley Cup final with a Boston Bruins jersey on. It was your crowning achievement in my mind as a mixed martial arts fighter. No, but dude, this is good stuff. This is high-level stuff for Max Holloway in my mind.
Master-level trolling. Master-level. Oh, red belt of trolling. Max Holloway killing it there. I thought it was interesting that he kind of did this Ireland tour. I don't know. I wonder if it was something that maybe him and his team kind of cooked up and said, hey, let's go to Ireland. If we want this fight, what better way than to go to his home soil and kind of troll him over there, go visit the Jameson factory and, you know, go to Croke Park. He was at Croke Park as well. And listen, I think that'd be an amazing fight. A lot has changed since those two last fought. I think for both of them, they're both different fighters, but Max Holloway, especially so. And I like it, man. If you want to get a fight in this game and today's mixed martial arts landscape,
right,
you kind of have to do things like that, especially right. if you want that big money fight against Conor McGregor.
It is an interesting stroke by Max Holloway, and it comes on the heels of a big win for Donald Cowboy Cerrone, his ensuing call out of Conor McGregor, and then Conor responding in kind on Twitter and sort of saying in some breath that he has an appetite for the Cerrone fight. So in terms of a next fight for Conor McGregor, we don't know exactly when that is going to be. I think what we do know, Kenny, there are a lot of interesting options. Conor's going to call his own shot, no matter what we think. I mean, I can sit here and tell you that a rematch with Dustin Poirier makes more competitive sense right now than a fight with Donald Cowboy Cerrone. But I think ultimately, mostly, it's going to come down to who Conor McGregor wants to fight. So I need Flo to tell me who he wants to see Conor McGregor fight next and ultimately who you think he is going to fight next. Now, I have eight names for you today. If I left anybody out, AnnickFlorianPodcast@gmail.com or let us know on Twitter, and hopefully there are no glaring omissions. But I got eight guys who I think Conor McGregor's next opponent will come out of this mix. So Khabib Nurmagomedov, of course, number one. The rematch obviously makes fiscal sense, if not competitive sense. Max Holloway, Ken Flo mentioned the history there. Perhaps it's a non-title fight at 155 pounds. Most don't expect Conor would go back down to featherweight. Dustin Poirier, again, another past McGregor victim. Nate Diaz always is going to be on this list. I think this is a fight that always makes financial sense. I had always hoped if they met for a third time that there would be championship stakes, and at least in the immediate future, that is not going to be the case. Donald Cerrone, as we mentioned. Tony Ferguson, 11 straight wins, still no shot at the undisputed UFC lightweight title. Hopefully his next fight is for that. Ally Aquinta, I know that's the fight Al wants. I'm not sure it makes much sense for Conor. And then Paulie Malignaggi, because I do think if Conor McGregor goes back to boxing, that maybe that would be the guy. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't have included him. Maybe he doesn't deserve inclusion on that list. Ken Flo, what can you tell me about Conor McGregor's next UFC fight?
I will tell you this. I'm going to be in a bad mood for the rest of the damn day because you put Paulie Malignaggi on list, guy. Come on, guy. All right. Terrible. No, I like it. Listen, I like it. For the boxing reason, I like it. But I will be in a bad mood for the rest of the day. All right. So who do I think he's going to fight next? Do you want that first or do you want to
know who do you think is most likely? Is it Cerrone because of what we saw recently?
You know, I think that's probably most likely. I think it's probably going to be Cerrone. Look, you got both of those guys who are true characters in the game. Both those guys are excellent strikers. You get Conor back on track by having him fight another striker, right? So, feasibly, let's say he goes out there and he beats Cowboy Cerrone in impressive fashion, him being a southpaw who's a high-pressure guy who has excellent hands. He could get it done against Cerrone. I think that makes sense for him. Now, if Cerrone goes out there and wins, now you get this guy who went from already being a big star to being a potential superstar,
right,
and then maybe fighting for the belt one more time against a guy who he's never faced before in Khabib Nurmagomedov. Tough stylistic matchup for Cowboy, but I think that's pretty much a win-win for the UFC. Two very popular guys going at it, one from the United States, the other from Ireland. Now, who do I want to fight? Who do I want to see Conor fight? I think Max Holloway. I think that makes the most sense. I do not want to see him fight Khabib Nurmagomedov. I think it's a tough matchup. I think he needs more time to prepare for such a fight. Mm-hmm. But I do like a fight against Max Holloway at 155 pounds. Now, for Max, he has nothing to lose at 155, right? He's not going to lose his belt. He can keep his belt at 145. He goes up in weight at 155 to fight Conor. I think that's pretty much a win-win for the UFC. Business-wise, I think that makes a whole lot of sense. And just, you can market the hell out of that fight. That's an easy fight to hype up. It's an amazing fight. The way that they match up, it's intriguing. It's mysterious. Both those guys are as popular as ever. I think that's the fight to make, because I don't know if that fight can ever be made again.
No, I think that you sort of led me to that point, right, is that fight would have less appeal, obviously, if Max Holloway were to go out and lose to Renato Moicano or Alexander Volkanovski, right? So in terms of striking while the iron is hot, and Max Holloway certainly has earned that opportunity, right? He's won 13 straight fights, including several featherweight title defenses since that loss to McGregor in 2013. My only issue with that is that you're potentially holding up the featherweight division for 6 months or so. Now, you don't have the logjam at 145 pounds like you do maybe at 135 pounds where a Sun Tzu and Moraes are fighting this weekend and both are worthy of a title shot yesterday, right? But I would land on Dustin Poirier. You know, I think this is the most competitive matchup. I also think for Conor McGregor, the appeal in the Poirier fight, maybe unlike the Cerrone fight, with respect to Cowboy Cerrone's two-fight winning streak, is that Dustin Poirier is a certifiable top five lightweight in the world right now, who is conceivably one win away from realizing that elusive first UFC title fight. So for Conor McGregor, if ultimately the goal is to have earned on paper another lightweight championship opportunity, then I think Poirier gives him the best path to do that. Now, certainly, Kenny, one win for Conor. Conor can fight Khabib right now if he wants to, okay? Even though Khabib has said competitively he is not worthy. But you can be sure if Conor says, I want to fight as soon as possible and I want Khabib to be the guy, that the promotion's going to probably make every effort to give him that opportunity, given the dollars and cents. So for me, if Conor is the competitor that I know him to be, I think the Poirier fight would be a touch more appealing than the Cerrone fight, if not the pay-per-view fight that maybe Cerrone-McGregor would be.
I think you have a point. Cerrone only has one fight at 155 after being away from the division after a couple years.
Right.
But he still brings that respect, and there's no doubt about it that as good as a fighter Dustin Poirier is, as far as the perception of people and who they know and who they want to watch, I think a lot of people would probably know Cowboy Cerrone's name over Dustin Poirier's name. And the fact that Cerrone and Conor haven't fought, I think that makes it more intriguing than, you know, yeah. Even though people are, you know, it's been a while. But again, people are going to remember that first round knockout against Dustin Poirier. And now, obviously, that was a different division. That was a long time ago. But, you know, I think the Cerrone fight makes a little bit more sense for her as well. But I don't know. I mean, stop. Who knows? I mean, both of those, there's a lot of options out there. And for all these fighters, I mean, I think if you asked anybody out there, would you want to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov for the belt, or would you want to fight Conor McGregor for all that money, I think a lot of people would pick Conor McGregor. I mean, that really is right. The fight that a lot of people want. So, listen, it's going to be interesting to see what direction they go. Obviously, for the fighters that are in it and really true mixed martial artists, they're going to try to get that belt and fight Khabib Nurmagomedov. But this is a life-changing event for a lot of these fighters. And if you have an opportunity to fight Conor McGregor and have it change your life, I think they do it.
And you got to have a lot of respect for Khabib Nurmagomedov to even come out publicly and articulate the fact that he doesn't think Conor is worthy, even though that is far and away the biggest payday for him. It seems like Khabib right. wants to fight Tony Ferguson based upon the body of work. And gosh, I mean, we scream from the rooftops. If Tony Ferguson isn't worthy of an undisputed UFC championship opportunity, then I'm not sure any fighter in UFC history ever has been.
And that's the thing, sorry, I wanted to get to as well. You let those guys fight for the belt as they right. should. You let right. Tony Ferguson and Khabib Nurmagomedov settle that, and you have Conor involved in another fight against Cerrone or Poirier or Holloway.
So I think we're in agreement that we both think the most likely course of action is going to be Conor McGregor versus Donald Cowboy Cerrone. I wonder how the fans feel, you know, if we were to do a poll, right. like what do people prefer Poirier versus Cerrone? And then I wanted to ask you, but long goes on hold. I want to know who you think is the tougher fight in 10 seconds, Dustin Poirier or Donald Cerrone for Conor right now.
Oh, man. Interesting. That's a tough answer. I think that Poirier is dangerous. I think he's way better than he was, and I think he's as hungry as ever. But I just think Cerrone has a little bit more weapons right now, man. He's yeah. got more weapons, and I also think he's a little bit more of a threat, you know, on the ground in some ways, even more so than
sure.
Poirier.
Sure. Very interesting conversation, and we'll find out, hopefully, sooner rather than later as to who is next for Khabib Nurmagomedov, Conor McGregor, Tony Ferguson, and the rest. We know what is next for Ray Longo, his weekly spot here on the Anakin Florian podcast. Let's get to Ray.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in his fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute.
Starring Ray Longo.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
Well, hopefully the listeners got to hear Ray Longo on hold just tell everybody that he's out of his fucking mind. It's 1:06 p.m. Eastern time, so we're a few minutes late, and Longo doesn't seem too happy about it. Good afternoon, Raymond.
Come on, man. Let's get this show rocking.
Oh, man. You don't keep a good man down. You don't keep a good man waiting. I mean, what is so pressing that you need to go do? You got to go hold some pads for Aljamain Sterling or what?
I got to hold pads, man. It's my whole life is holding pads.
I bet it is. Have you ever held pads for Kenneth Allen Florian?
No, I haven't, but I would love to.
Oh, man, that fucking jab, dude.
I think we'd have a lot of fun together.
That would be fun.
So, Aljamain Sterling, Jimmy Rivera, February 17th, Phoenix, Arizona. No streaming service needed. This one is live on ESPN. Tell me the betting line, Ray. What do you think?
Oh, man. Is the betting line out yet?
Of course it is.
Well, I'm going to say they have Rivera as the favorite.
You're right.
Minus 150.
So it's wider than I thought. I wrote down minus 140 Rivera, and maybe it's just my Longo and Weidman MMA bias. But I thought it'd be a little bit closer. Jimmy Rivera, minus 200. Aljamain Sterling, plus 170. Sounds to me like you need to let us go and find a local bookie to load up on Aljo.
Yeah, I'm going to try to find a local bookie. But look, very tough fight. Jimmy's been around for a long time. Very good. Aljo's looking good, man. This is going to be a great fight. And I think Aljo knows what's at stake, and he's going to rise to the occasion.
Well, I don't think it's going to be too hard to find a bookie in Long Island, New York, Ray. But listen, man, what's going on with Chris, man? He had some surgery on his neck. Was that something that just happened out of the blue? Was it something, seemed like it was something he didn't expect? Do you have anything to say about that surgery that he had?
You know, he had a disc replacement, and it didn't come out of the blue. He was waiting. They waited a while because he didn't have, like, feeling, but they say the determining fact, and I'm just talking generalizations because I'm not really that sure, but I was working out with him a lot before that, and they said the feeling was okay. That feeling came back, but he did lose strength. I mean, we were lifting a lot together, and he wasn't looking good, so they said, let's give it another 3 weeks. He had scheduled the original surgery for the day after Christmas. And then they postponed it. Like, let's see if we can get some strength back. The strength never came back. So that was the determining factor. And then he just went in. They made that decision last week, and he just jumped right into the hospital. They said it was a success. I mean, he still can't drive. I just got off the phone with him, and obviously his neck's a little sore. But, yeah, they replaced the disc, like a 3.5-hour surgery, too. So it was a little different than the other one. Yeah, it was wacky. I mean, even when he was explaining it to me, I had to tell him to stop because it wasn't, you know, they got to move his trachea over, they got to do this. I'm like,
jeez,
that's
man.
Crazy.
He posted some picture of his neck draining. I mean, it looked gnarly, man.
Yeah, I don't even know why he's doing that. He sent me that, and I said, well, don't ever send me that again. What's the purpose of that?
Yeah, go have some breakfast after that.
Yeah, unbelievable. But yeah, so supposedly it went good, and, you know, it's funny, man. Somebody had a problem with their thumb, so they went to ask Chris, you know, what'd you do for your thumb? Then somebody had a problem with their knee. They went to, I go, Chris, you're like a walking encyclopedia now of injuries. Everybody comes to you because you've been there like 10 times on each body part. So, yeah. So, I mean, he's a better man than me. I got to tell you, I'm a chicken shit when it comes to that. So.
Certainly sounds like it, Ray.
Thank you, John.
So, but you notice Ken Flo's the one with the hard hitting questions, right? Constantly asking you about injuries. I'm just trying to see if you're trying to get a bet in on Aljamain Sterling. Ken Flo's the hard hitting journalist.
Oh,
yeah, right.
Aljo's looking good. Very good. We had a great session last night. He had actually finished the week off really good. So I like where he's at. You know, and again, I say this with Aljo, we've still yet to see what Aljo could do. So I'm still waiting for his coming out party. You know, that's how talented I think he is. So,
well, people don't like when I suggest that these title eliminator type fights, when they don't go your way, can be 2 to 4 year setbacks. But when you look at 135 pounds, Raymond, I say this with all due respect, this is one you have to have, right? You beat Jimmy Rivera. All of a sudden, the way it sets up your career trajectory in 2019 and 2020 is completely different than if you guys lose this fight. And especially given that TJ and Henry just fought, that you got a Sun Sal and Marais this weekend, everybody fighting sort of close together. This is the biggest. I know they say every next fight's the biggest fight of the career, but this is the biggest fight of Aljo's career for sure.
Yeah, this is the biggest fight of his career. I think he knows it. These guys have been going back and forth. Look, Jimmy's a good guy. Obviously, you know, we're all from the tri-state area. You know, Schulte, you know, Danny and his brother Ron, they're all good guys. So we know what to expect. Those guys always come to fight. And, yeah, I'm saying the biggest fight of his career, and I agree with you. But, you know, I'm not putting that type of pressure. I just want him to go out and do what he does
right
in the gym, and then I'll be very happy. You know what
right
I mean? That's all he has to do is whatever he does in the gym, just doing that fight, and we'll have a great night.
And I'll take care of applying that pressure when he walks to the octagon, okay?
Okay, yeah, definitely.
Put the pressure on him, John. I will. That's
yeah,
my job.
But like you said, too, though, all of these fights are big.
Yeah, no,
nobody's
of course.
I mean, you know, that's why I say, like, look, these guys, they're all fighting the top guys in the world. And, you know, whatever happens, happens. But, you know, they're all at a great level. I'm proud of all of them, everybody. You know what I mean? It's really a good thing. So we're not looking for easy fights. They're not getting easy fights. And
right,
look, if this is what you want to do, man, this is your time to shine. So Aljo, he's on the big stage, man. He knows it, and should be a great night.
And I guess I overstated a little bit, because you drop a split decision to Jimmy Rivera and then you step up on short notice and beat in a Sun Sal, then the loss literally doesn't hurt you at all. So it's not like the be-all or the end-all, but when I look at 135 pounds, if Aljo could get this one, he would be in business. All right, I'm going to get a prediction from you on a Sun
Sal. And John, the only guy really that beat him was Marais at this point. I mean, to be a Sun Sal fight, I really thought he won. But obviously a close fight, and Rafael's a good dude. But, you know, those guys, that whole top five or six, anybody could beat anybody on any given day. That's what I believe. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I thought, what's the prediction for this weekend?
Yeah, you can win $100 if you can correctly predict who wins a Sun Sal or Marais. Rafael, a Sun Sal is the +160 underdog. Marlon Marais, the -190 favorite. I know you've prepared for both of these guys. How's it going down this weekend?
Yeah, I'm going to, first of all, this $100. I mean, 2018 cost me like $750 to be on
it
the
did
podcast.
Yeah.
So, I mean, okay, you guys are running a fucking Ponzi scheme over there. What we
do? That's hilarious.
The first fight was very close. I had Marais winning. I'm saying a Sun Sal has had too many close split decisions. This one's not going his way. I go with Marais.
All right, Marlon Marais, the prediction from Ray Longo. Notice how Ken Flo, he like subtly took a shot there at his year-end bonus not being up to snuff.
Hey, he didn't make the right picks, Ray. What are you going to do?
I guess that's you guys
we
got
tried
the bonus. What are you talking about?
We tried.
Yeah. Ken Flo's bonus was bigger than yours. I mean, I'm okay telling our audience that. Hey, do you have 60 more seconds? I just want to get your take on one final item.
Let's do it. Come on, man.
So I
don't like. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead, man. I know when we're on video, it's less of a traffic jam. So the floor is yours.
Exactly. I that's what I was going to say. I don't like not looking at you guys. Right now, I'm talking to a no caller ID, and I don't like it.
Well, Ken Flo today looks so good. He looks like he was born in 1986 and not 1976. All right, last thing. So this probably didn't cross your brow because your NFL boycott continues, but Oakland Raiders quarterback Derek Carr, I guess he didn't like what he heard on ESPN's First Take from Max Kellerman and my colleague Stephen A. Smith So much so that he tweeted at the UFC and Dana White. He wrote, "Hey, how do I challenge a couple of these clowns on TV to a fight? I think we should start a business together where pro athletes can challenge some of these people to an octagon fight until they give us an answer." And he went on to say, "You don't know me, stop lying." And then Bovada pushed out a betting line that Stephen A. Smith would be a slight favorite if he were to get in a cage fight against Derek Carr.
Oh, man.
Has there ever been a pundit or an expert? I mean, I know when I say things that you don't like, you know, you rake me over the coals. I mean, has there ever been a guy that has really said something that you felt was either defaming one of your fighters or defaming you? Have you ever gotten super animated with a talking head in your career?
No. I don't
it's like
think
walking
so, no.
off a duck's back, huh?
But somebody made Stephen A. Smith a favorite in an octagon fight.
Well, right. It's crazy. I know he has an athletic background and he played basketball, but basically they're telling you that Stephen A. Smith is favored to beat an NFL quarterback that is supposedly in his athletic prime right now. It's a little crazy, I would think.
Wow. Yeah. We want that guy making some lines for us.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Seriously.
All right, man. Well,
I don't get caught up in the bullshit like that, really. You know, I really don't. So I'm going to say the answer is no, but I'll think about it and have another answer for you next week.
All right, buddy. Thanks for the time. And Ken Flay, got anything else for Ray before we let him fly?
That's it. We miss you, buddy.
Yeah, miss you. When are we getting video? Is there any
I don't know. We need to see the hair
DJ.
Do
man. I know. I want to see your new cut. He says it looks great.
Hey,
I'm looking at a red dot. Right now I'm looking at a red dot with a phone on it. I mean, this is all awful.
All right, we'll try to be better next week, and I'll try to not put too much pressure on Aljo in terms of the stakes of the fight. I'll see you soon, man.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot, guys.
See you right.
The Ray Longo minute every week can flow right here on the Anakin Florian podcast. You know, it seems like he is not trying to overstate this Sterling Rivera fight, but dude, it's like, I mean, I hate to say it, but if Aljo loses that fight, it's going to be a tough climb. 135, man. Go look at the top 15. It's like, I don't want to say it all comes down to this, but if you're Aljamain Sterling, hope you're not listening. All comes down to this, in my opinion.
135 pounds is just ridiculous right now. And you're right. I mean, listen, every fight is going to be important when you're talking about, you know, the top seven guys. But this fight in particular is a tricky one for both guys. And it's an interesting style matchup. So wish the best of both of those guys.
All right. So Ken Flo rallied, as many of you know, to win the 2018 main event challenge. I will pay off my bet here and do the power hour in a couple weeks. But, you know, if you're on the losing end, as I have been the last 2 years, there's only one thing that you can do. You fucking dust yourself off. You get up and you try to take the kid out in 2019. To that end, let us get to the main event challenge.
Main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fights! I'm gonna do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
All right, so my quest to not lose back-to-back-to-back main event challenges begins in earnest right now. If you forgot the rules, quick refresher, there is added incentive to pick underdogs here. So an underdog, even as slight as plus 105 or even money, still gives you an extra point. If you're plus 200 to plus 299 in that range, you get an extra 2 points and so on. If you do have suggestions for slight scoring modifications or you want to participate against Ken Flo in the 2019 main event challenge, AnikFlorianPodcast@gmail.com. AnikFlorianPodcast@gmail.com. Give us your full name, your phone number. We don't need a reason why you want to make picks against Ken Flo. AnikFlorianPodcast@gmail.com to be considered. Of course, the loser of this main event challenge will have to do something that is mostly unpleasant as mutually agreed upon by the winning and losing teams. All right. UFC Fight Night, Assuncao versus Moraes 2, Fortaleza, Brazil, ESPN Plus this Saturday night. And joining us to make picks today, I think he's from the Midwest. Podcast listener Kyle Michaels is with us. Kyle, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure, Kyle. Is it Michaels or Mickles?
It's actually both. One's just the American way or the European way of saying it.
So if someone asks you to introduce yourself, what do you go with?
Michaels. We'll do
yes!
it with Michaels.
One for one. I was going to ask you, but I wanted the challenge. I mean, this is how pathetic my existence is. I like to challenge myself when it comes to pronunciations. Well, Kyle, we appreciate your time, man, and your listenership. Obviously, I know you're a sharp MMA mind, and we're excited to begin 2019 with you. Today, guys, five picks of the six main card fights. First out of the chute for us, light heavyweight division, Johnny Walker Blue, minus 220. Taking on Justin Ledet, who was the plus 180 underdog. Johnny Walker won the UFC debut in a minute and 57 seconds. It was a knockout of Khalil Roundtree Jr. back in November. Certainly a memorable fight, a memorable result, his seventh straight win. And now the Brazilian gets another main card slot here, Kyle, against Justin Ledet. What do you think, Walker or Ledet for you?
I'm going to go with Johnny Walker. I'll admit that I don't know too much about him, but from what I can gather, he seems like a finisher, a strong finisher, and he seems like he might have more tools to win than Ledet. Ledet's got good boxing, but I don't think that might be enough to hold up to the more diverse Walker. So let's go Walker.
All right, Camp Flo. Kyle likes Johnny Walker Blue. Ledet coming off his first loss as a pro. It came against Alexander Rakic, so that's a quality loss, if you want to call it that, even though it wasn't a great fight for him. That was last July. He was 3-0 in the UFC coming in, started as a heavyweight, but he's the underdog here, Ken Flo. What do you think, Johnny Walker or Justin Ledet?
Yeah, listen, I agree with Kyle. I think that Walker has more ways to win. I think his height is going to pose some problems for Ledet as well. And he's just a little too one-dimensional for me. Can Ledet win? Absolutely. He does hit quite hard. And Walker can be susceptible to that overhand. But I think Walker gets it done. I think Walker will get the finish somewhere in and around the second or third round.
All right, moving on down the main card in Fortaleza. Charles Du Bronx Oliveira, slight favorite here, minus 115 against David Tamer. Tamer, the Swede, comes back at minus 105. So you do get an extra point here if you correctly pick a Tamer win, and he wins because he is the underdog technically. Kyle, close fight on paper here. Tamer 5-0 in the UFC. How do you think he fares this weekend against Charles Oliveira?
Yeah, real tough fight to pick. One guy in Tamer has real exceptional striking. The other guy, Oliveira, has real exceptional grappling. One thing that I think gets kind of overlooked is Tamer's ring IQ or octagon IQ.
Yeah.
I think he does a good job of staying away from other guys' strengths, and I think he just might do very well at staying away from Oliveira's jiu-jitsu. I think Oliveira still has a good chance at catching him. But I've also seen, from what I've gathered, he seems a bit susceptible to heavy strikers such as Paul Felder. But he does look strong since being at light heavyweight. So it's real tough to pick, but I'm going to go with Tamer. I think he stays away from the jiu-jitsu and somewhere down the line catches Oliveira and gets a TKO.
All right, so David Tamer by TKO, the pick for Kyle. You're certainly hit on some good points when it comes to David Tamer. Ken Flo, he's smart. He's technical. Last three wins have been by decision, but he's unblemished, as I mentioned, 5-0 in the UFC. Now, Charles Oliveira still not getting a chance to go back down and compete at featherweight despite his public wishes. He's been quite good at lightweight, Kenny, 4-1 since moving back up. Do you know how many times Oliveira has missed weight, by the way, for 45 in the UFC, Flo?
Three times?
Four.
Oh,
so he's missed weight four times. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Right. I mean, it sounds a lot bigger than three. Yeah. Right. So despite his wishes, those have not been granted yet. But I agree with Kyle. It's a very interesting stylistic clash because Oliveira is only the single most decorated submission artist in UFC history. 22 UFC starts, 12 submission wins, 13 bonuses, including one for his finish of Jim Miller, which was just 6 weeks ago. Ken Flo, what do you think? Charles Oliveira, slight favorite here against David Tamer.
Yeah, that's right. Now, listen, where one is weak, the other is strong. And I like Tamer. You know, he's good at stopping the takedown. He's pretty good at moving his feet. I think Oliveira, with his Muay Thai style approach, I think can defend himself relatively well against Tamer, as long as he doesn't get into a firefight, as long as he doesn't decide to just trade with Tamer in the pocket, I think he should be okay and be able to utilize his length and reach to keep Tamer on the outside and not take such damaging strikes. I think he needs to eventually, though, get to the clinch, look for that takedown where he's going to have a huge advantage. Tamer has an advantage over Oliveira on the feet, but not as big as Oliveira has on the ground. Can Tamer win this fight? Absolutely. This is another well-matched fight, but I'm going to go with Oliveira. I think he finds a way to take this to the ground. I think Tamer, while he's a very good striker, I think doesn't pace himself so well. He does get tired late in fights sometimes because of that high-energy style. Sometimes gets a little too emotional in there, and it the fight being in Brazil, I think this favors Oliveira as well. I'm going to go with Do Bronx.
I'm glad you brought up the Brazilian backdrop because I do think it's a factor here. And dude, Charles, he's just so confident right now, despite his desire to go back to 45. He's a monster at 55, and I thought he'd be a bigger favorite than just slightly at minus 115. I guess we'll see how it plays out. All right, another interesting stylistic matchup here, in my opinion. Former two-time UFC title challenger Damian Maia, 41 years old now. He is the minus 170 favorite against Lyman Good. Good comes back at plus 145. Kyle Maia, one of the most tenured guys on the roster, 29th UFC appearance this weekend. He will get it on Brazilian soil. What do you think about the home game for Maia against Lyman Good?
I think all good things about it. I just want to say that Lyman Good is probably one of the scariest dudes I've ever seen in a room.
Yeah.
And he's super strong, and sure, he always has that chance to maybe catch Maia, but I definitely got to go with Maia in Brazil. I think he wins via submission somewhere down the line.
All right, Damian Maia by submission for Kyle. So Lyman Good, Kenny, you know his story well. We interviewed him on MMA Live way back in the day, 2008. He's battled injuries, suspension, a lot of different circumstances in his MMA career, but the pro record's still pretty shiny, 20-4 with a no contest. He's been as inactive as anyone, though, for whatever reason. UFC debut was in 2015, only two fights since. Did fight recently. It was a TKO of Ben Saunders November 3rd of last year at UFC 230. What do you think about Lyman Good here, plus 145 against Maia?
Listen, I think this is quite possibly the worst stylistic matchup for him in the division in a lot of ways. I think Good has some excellent power. I think he moves pretty well. I think he's definitely going to have the speed advantage over Maia. And Maia needs to be careful. Sometimes he gets caught in boxing mode. And I think as this fight goes on, it favors Lyman Good. There's no doubt about it. But I think Damian Maia in Brazil, if he's able to get Good up against the fence, I think Lyman can wrestle pretty well, but I'm not sure he's going to be good enough early on against Damian Maia. I think it's either going to be an early win for Maia or a late win for Good on the feet. I'm going to go with the early win for Damian Maia by submission. I think Maya's ability to get this fight to the ground, it might be a little bit too strong early on for Lyman. And I don't care who you are in that division. If you're on your back against Damian Maia, he's going to take advantage and he's probably going to take you out.
All right, two plays there on Damian Maia in the minus 170 range. That brings us to the co-main event, which is just outstanding. A couple of Brazilians here, fourth-ranked featherweight contender Renato Moicano, minus 130, the favorite against the number two-ranked former world champion Jose Aldo. Aldo comes back at plus 110. Kyle, Moicano, considered by a lot of people, despite the number four next to his name, to be the top contender. Lone pro loss came to Brian Ortega, a fight he was winning before getting finished. He's rallied from that with two very high-quality wins, outpointed Calvin Kattar, unanimous decision, and then a performance bonus winning submission of Cub Swanson. That was back at UFC 227 in August of last year. Huge opportunity for Renato Moicano against the great Jose Aldo. Who do you like in the co-main?
All right. This was the hardest fight for me to pick, personally. Moicano's riding a lot of momentum right now, and he's a serious threat to everyone in the 145-pound division. But at the same time, I can't overlook the veteran status of Aldo, former champion. And I think Aldo might have fought the better competition still out of the throughout both guys' careers. And like I said, it's really hard for me, but let's go with the underdog. I think Aldo gets this done somehow. I think it's another bite down and gritty performance from him, and he pulls it off somehow.
Somehow, some way, the king of Rio will rise again. So it was October 8th, 2011. Our own Kenny Florian, in what proved to be his final professional mixed martial arts fight, fought Jose Aldo. They went 25 hard minutes. Flo, this is one of the greatest featherweights of all time. Obviously, some would argue he's still the best when you look at the title defenses, the strength of schedule, and everything else. I just feel like we need to appreciate him because you just never know when Jose Aldo is going to walk away and go back to his burger joint and everything he's established in Rio and move on from the game. It was a huge stoppage win for him against Jeremy Stephens, and that thrust him right back into title contention late last year. What do you think about Jose Aldo here in this three-round co-main event against Renato Moicano?
You know, I just don't think it's over yet for Jose Aldo. I think he has certainly changed his style over the years. We haven't seen the Aldo that has kicked as much as he used to for whatever reason. Some people point to that possible moped accent that he had in Brazil of why maybe he doesn't kick as much. I would like to see him bring that back, and I think he definitely needs to use that against the taller Renato Moicano. Now, I think Moicano is a good fighter. I think he's solid everywhere, doesn't have a whole lot of weaknesses necessarily. But I think Aldo is just going to be faster. I think he's better on the ground. I think Aldo is a little bit more of a cleaner striker as well when he's staying disciplined. Sometimes Aldo, not sometimes, I think a lot of times in the last few fights, he gets way too emotional and ends up in these firefights. And I think every time you do that, you're throwing the dice in the pocket. I mean, these are little gloves. Right. You're staying in the line of fire. You're not finding angles. You have to be very, very careful. But I still think Aldo has enough to beat Moicano. And I think there's a reason why he took this fight and made it a three-rounder instead of a five-rounder.
Dude, I mean, how do you pick against the King of Rio? You know, I know that's a title that some of us have bestowed upon him. And, Kenny, I don't have to tell you what that distinction means in Rio de Janeiro. But, God damn it, he will always be the King of Rio to me. And I'm just excited to sit back, set my alarm clock, right, because I will have slept for 3 hours. I'll wake up. And you can be sure when Jose Aldo is fighting live on television, I will be watching. All right, the main event, a rematch that figures to at least give us some semblance of clarity in the UFC's bantamweight division. Marlon Moraes, minus 190. Rafael Assuncao, the plus 160 underdog, despite the fact that he won the first meeting by split decision. So that one was UFC 212, June 3rd, 2017. It was Moraes' UFC debut. The numbers were very close, very quickly here. Significant strikes. Assuncao, 43 of 134, 32%. Moraes, 44 of 150, 29%. Three total takedown attempts between them. Assuncao, 0 for 1. Moraes, 0 for 2. Now, Kyle, Moraes is the betting favorite here in some part because of his recent performances. Back-to-back vicious knockouts of Aljamain Sterling and Jimmy Rivera. One of them 67 seconds. The other, I think, 33 seconds. Assuncao, though, did take the head-to-head meeting. He has won four straight overall. This is the main event. We'll need a round and a method of victory. Kyle Michaels, who wins the main event on the equator?
Okay, another tough fight to pick. I think it's going to be quite similar to their first meeting, but the key difference is going to be it's five rounds versus three rounds last time. I think Assuncao is kind of in a position where he needs to impress if he really wants to get that title shot in 2019. And I think he definitely has the counterpunch ability to catch Moraes slipping. He almost kind of did in the, I think it was the third round of their first fight, but Moraes shook it off pretty good. And I think the five-round fight kind of favors Marlon a little bit more, being a former champion and doing the five-round fights a little more often than Assuncao has in the past. And real tough, but I'm going to go with Moraes. Again, I think it's very similar to their first fight. I think it's going to be really close. It might even be a little bit more entertaining with it being the main event in Brazil. We could see a really good competitive back-and-forth fight. But I think at the end of it, I think that it's going to be a split decision for Moraes. Can I pick that?
Of course you can. Marlon on ice by split decision. You also get credit if he wins by unanimous decision. Kyle Michaels, great job today. Where are you from, by the way, before we let you go?
I'm from Waukegan, Illinois. It's like right in the middle of Chicago and Milwaukee. So.
Okay. So are you a Chicago Bears fan?
I'm actually a New Orleans Saints fan.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. Well, I'm not even going to bring up any more football, man, then, because I just feel for you.
Yeah. Can't complain too much because it's a contact sport.
Yep.
But thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it. Thank you, Kenny. Thank you, John.
Good work, Kyle.
Thank you.
All right. So Ken Flo will need a main event pick here. Marlon Moraes -190. Rafael Dos Anjos +160. The only bantamweight in UFC history with more wins at 135 pounds in the octagon than TJ Dillashaw is Rafael Dos Anjos. I do believe, Kenny, if he wins this fight, he'll hold out for that undisputed UFC bantamweight title fight. I think when Henry Cejudo knocked out TJ Dillashaw quickly, a lot of us pivoted our thoughts to Moraes and Dos Anjos, be like, man, this is like worst case scenario for these guys, right? That those two now are almost set up for an immediate rematch. But this is a huge fight nonetheless, even if the next fight for the winner is not for the belt immediately. Moraes Dos Anjos too, Ken Flo, which way are you going?
And listen, the winner of this fight should get the next title shot, in my opinion. It definitely would put them in position. Dos Anjos especially, given the fact that he does have a win over TJ Dillashaw. And he did it in Brazil, and I think we were there for it. But, Dos Anjos is a solid fighter, doesn't have a whole lot of weaknesses in his game. He's smart. Knows when to be conservative, knows when to be aggressive, has brutal leg kicks. But I think, Moraes, I think he learned a lot in that first fight. That was his UFC debut. Imagine having your UFC debut against Rafael Dos Anjos. And I think the big takeaway for me in that fight with Moraes is, could he have won that fight? Sure. But I think he looked at that fight and said, you know what? I should have been busier. I took my foot off the gas in that fight. And I think that really was the big difference. He didn't throw a whole lot of volume against Dos Anjos. And I think if he did, he would have certainly won that fight. And I think he's going to make those adjustments in this fight. I think Marlon Moraes will win this fight. You know, I'm tempted to do like a fourth round or fifth round TKO for Moraes. But I think just the veteran of Sun Tzu and the fact that he's going to be fighting tough, and it's rare that you ever see him get caught in this sport, I'll go with the decision as well for Moraes.
Yeah, Sun Tzu about as hard to hit as it gets. Third highest strike defense in UFC bantamweight history, and at least over the first 15 minutes he proved hard to hit. So you both agree, Marlon Moraes by decision. All right, one final prediction this week. You know, most of our main event challenge is UFC selections, but there are a couple times a year where we will make football picks. And because this is our last show before Super Bowl 53, it is time for our Super Bowl predictions. I will lead. I'm very excited because I don't get to make any picks on this show. So, all right, so you know I never pick the Boston teams to win, so I'm certainly going with the Rams, but how do I arrive at that decision? So this defense scares the hell out of me, particularly up front, Aaron Donald and Dominican Sue on the defensive line. I think Tom Brady's going to lean on James White. I think it's going to be a lot of quick dropbacks trying to get rid of the football to take that defensive line out of the game. But I have said for years that the Patriots' most valuable player is not Tom Brady or somebody on defense. It's number 11, Julian Edelman. And if Sean McVay and the Rams can figure out a way to take Julian Edelman away, I think it's going to be a long day for the Pats. I'm hoping that's not the case. But when you've seen the third down production from Julian Edelman in the postseason, I think this is a Rams defense that is going to try to take him out of the game. And if they do, I think it's going to be an uphill battle. I'll go Rams 27, Patriots 21. By the way, the spread's 2.5. So it's New England -2.5. The Rams are +2.5 points. I think the Rams win this game outright, Kenny. I hope I'm wrong. How do you see it playing out next Sunday in Atlanta, kid?
Pretty simple, John. I don't know shit about football, but I will make a prediction. The very little that I know about football, I think the Patriots can get it done. I think they have so much experience out there. The Rams, they scare me both offensively and defensively, but I think the Patriots will win this one, and How? I don't know, man. I don't know. Another like last minute win from Brady. You know, a little comeback.
Oh, I can't take it. I can't take it, Flo. I somebody asked me, what's your dream scenario? Like Brady wins it on the final drive, a really close competitive Super Bowl. Neither. What do you think? It's 52-7 New England with no emotion, right? Blacking out by halftime because I don't have to worry about the second half, right? I don't want a close Super Bowl. I want a great game. Yeah.
No, for sure. Hey, listen, I got a question for you. If the Patriots win this one, would you want to see Brady retire after the season, or would you want to see him play another one?
I want to see him play as long as he wants to, and I mean, short of an injury happening in this game. I mean, he has said there's a 0% chance that he's retiring after this football game because, Kenny, unlike all these other athletes, right?
Yeah.
And I should say, unlike most other professional athletes, he's not so focused on going out on top, right? He will leave the game when maybe he no longer can compete at the highest level. But I think his individual goals sort of are transcendent at this point, and he wants to play until he's 45 years old. And far be it from me to doubt his ability to do so, you know?
Great answer. Love it.
Before we go, Flo, I know you've got some news to share, some positive news on one of your former training partners, professional boxer Adonis Stevenson.
Yeah, that's right. You know, a lot of people know a couple months back, you know, he fought in Quebec and after his fight, he was feeling dizzy and actually went into a coma. And then in early December, there was some news that he was coming out of his coma, that he began talking, and there are some good signs. And now they're saying that he is talking. He's actually walking on his own now. And again, it's just another reminder that the combat sports is very real and the threats are very real as well. And it was just scary hearing that news. I didn't see the fight. I heard the news, a couple weeks after. I had no idea. He was a guy that I trained with and, you know, quiet guy. I didn't know him well at all. But again, it was a powerful reminder for me that things can go wrong in the sport. You are getting hit in the head. And my thoughts and prayers are with him and his family. And I was happy to see that news, and I hope he's able to make a full recovery. He's not there yet, to where he used to be. But man, I hope he is.
Great
and does.
Encouraging news on Adonis Stevenson. You know what's interesting too? I took this concussion reporting class online last week. It only took me 20 minutes or so, right, to get this concussion reporting certificate. And it was something my agent sent me just to look at and sort of just so that when something happens, and a lot of it I think has to do with football and lacrosse and non-combat sports settings, right? But how, as a reporter or a journalist, you're supposed to handle those situations in terms of what the medical protocol is when somebody is injured to the head. But of course, as I'm taking this course, I'm thinking, well, we operate in a workspace in which part of the goal here and the methodology in the sport is to cause damage to the head of your opponent. You know, it's very real, and I think sometimes we do lose sight of that. I mean, I covered a boxing death about 14 years ago now. God, we're old, but it's really sad. And I think sometimes as a boxing fan, when you see it up close for, you know, 36 minutes of hell and you feel like you've witnessed three or four concussions, it has a profound impact on you moving forward. I will never forget that night. And thankfully Adonis, he seems to be starting to come out the other side, you know?
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. And a lot of times, you know, we think, oh, this guy, he's got such a great chin, he's fine. That doesn't mean your brain isn't taking tremendous amounts of damage, right? Anyways, I was happy to hear that news.
And also congratulations to Ryan Bader. I know our MMA discussion almost solely focuses on the UFC, but there's a guy who had 20 UFC fights, and he's got a belt for each kid now as he is a two-division champion. And just feel really good for Ryan Bader. I wish he got that Cormier fight in 2015. I know it's the one that got away. The fight never happened. But good for Ryan Bader making money and winning gold outside the UFC. All right, we got to get out of here. Thank you to the usual suspects, Ray Longo, TJ DeSantis behind the glass. Also, thank you to MyBookie.ag for sponsoring the program this week. Next week, full Fort DeLaza recap. And then we turn our attention to UFC 234 and the middleweight championship fight between Robert Whittaker and Kelvin Gastelum from Melbourne, Australia. With that, have a great week, folks. Enjoy Super Bowl 53. For Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. We'll talk to you again next Monday, even if the Pats lose. We'll be here until then. You'll later.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast is a TJ DeSantis production. Its content is intended for private use only.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.